Welcome to Hype episode 190, but like for real this time. My name is Selena, notoriously bad at math and numbers in general. Sorry about the mix-up last week. This is 190 of Hype. We're very excited to be here. I have Pam with me. Say hello.
Hello.
Hello. I feel like we should just repeat all our fun jokes about episode 200 from last week, but
we're getting old, etc., etc.,
etc.
Brain is clearly going because we can't count.
Clearly, that's what happens when you hit 190, age. You guys. Well, I feel better now. We have a fun show to get into this week. We're going to be talking about some movies, some TV show news, and we're going to get to some of your listener feedback. Our bonus topic this week, which is available to all patrons who subscribe at the $2 a month level on patreon.com/hypepodcast, is going to be about the fact that, you know, Kelly Marie Tran has deleted her Instagram account. Star Wars, the Star Wars fandom is sort of going through a bit of a reckoning right now, and we want to give that some more attention. So if you are a patron or if you're considering subscribing for $2 a month, you can look forward to that discussion over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. If you want to get in touch with us about this show, anything we talk about, anything you would like us to talk about, any opinions you have, you can send those to us via email, which is hype@hypeable.com. And you can also send us a tweet at @hypeablehype. We also have an Instagram at @hypeablehype. We have a Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find all the stories we talk about this week on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. We look forward to getting your feedback, guys. If you have any, please send it in because we love hearing from you. All right, so the first thing, as always, is how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Pam, you watched a movie. Yay.
Surprise, surprise.
I'm excited to hear about this one.
Yeah, I went to see Ocean's 8, and it was just, oh my God, it was such a fun time at the movies, and that's kind of like all I wanted from this, you know? I just wanted to go have a good time at the movies with like all my favorite female celebrities. Everyone's just like so great in it. I mean, we've talked so much about like the stellar cast in this, and I just really enjoyed it so much. And I don't think it's like, I wouldn't say it's like as flashy, action packed as like some other heist movies, but I feel like it works. And it was just a really fun time. So if you haven't seen it yet, get out there and check it out. Cause I had a good time going to see this.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's completely devoid of conflict. It's basically just like you said, a fun time, but that people really enjoy that.
I mean, it's not like nobody's going to die, you know?
Okay.
it's you know how sometimes you have high stakes heist movies and it's like you can feel like the fear and you're kind of like maybe worried for the characters or whatever. I don't think this is necessarily this. It doesn't really get like your heart pumping that way. But I just, it was just fun. It was fun to
but
watch.
But isn't that what the Ocean's 11 movies are like as well? Like, aren't they kind of like the same formula of just like a bunch of actors having a good time?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, it's been a while since I've seen the Oceans franchise, but I know that, I mean, like, I don't want to like give it away or anything, but I just, I think it's really fun. And I think that the cool thing is that even though there are so many big names in this movie, it doesn't really feel like one person, like everybody kind of has their moment, which is really cool. Sometimes it's kind of hard to ensure that that happens, but I feel like everybody kind of has their moment in this movie, and it's really great. And it's been really fun also to like tune into like all the interviews that the actresses have been doing, and you can just really feel like the camaraderie, and that's always really nice too, because it's like we've seen in the past where like it's not really easy to fake that, you know, like if you don't have chemistry as a cast, you just don't have chemistry. And so on like a little sidebar, it's also been really fun to see some of the interviews with all of these awesome ladies talking about their good time on set. So,
well, I actually haven't been to see any movies yet, although I did have a very delayed birthday party this weekend, and I did get a couple of cinema tickets, so I will be going. I haven't decided yet, because I only got two, so I'm like, am I going to go see Ocean's 8, or am I going to go see Solo? I don't really know yet, but I'll probably have seen one by the next time I'm on an episode of Hype. But for now, what I do want to talk about is just something that I have wanted to recommend for a while, and I've never really had the time to do it, so I'll do it now, which is I am not like a massive YouTube viewer, but I do have a couple of people that I do watch and like. I think I've talked about Anna Akana in the past and a couple of others, but something that I do, and I know Pam does it too, so I'm not too ashamed of this, is like when I'm really stressed or when I'm really sort of, I can't concentrate and I just need something on in the background, I put on Let's Play videos of just people playing video games. I know a lot of people do this. It's such a waste of time, but it's also extremely soothing, and I really enjoy watching people play The Last of Us. That's like one of the best things that's not soothing at all, but I just really enjoy people discovering like all the terrible things. And by the way, The Last of Us Trailer 2, I'm not going to talk about it this week because it wasn't a news story, but oh my God! Anyway, so what I'm trying to say is that when you find like a good gamer that you like to watch, that's really cool because usually they do a lot of streams and they have a lot of content and you can tune in and out of. And one of the ones that I really enjoy is someone called Megan Yeah, who is like Megan, like M-E-G-H-A-N, and then Yeah, Y-E-A-H. Probably not her real last name, but that's okay. And she's just like a female gamer from Canada, and she's played The Last of Us and Fallout and Zelda and Skyrim and Witcher and all those things. And she has like a billion videos up on YouTube. And it's a really nice gamer to follow if you are looking for content like that. I primarily go for female gamers just because, I don't know, that's just, you know, I like supporting the women when I can. So she's good and she's fun and she's sort of chill and might just be a good person to put on, like if you're cleaning or doing something boring or something like that. So that's my rec for today. It's Megan, yeah.
I like that. She's yeah. like a real gamer. I don't really watch like real game, but that sounds mean. But like my favorite gaming channel is Dan and Phil Games, and I'm sure that you've heard the name tossed around. But if you don't really like hardcore gaming and you just want something that's mostly two people just bantering, kind of like maybe what we do on this show, I would check that out because they'll play everything from like Sims. I'm just on their channel right now. They have like 53 episodes of Sim gaming. There's Golf with Friends, Bucket of Doom, Cards Against Humanity, Google Feud, Mario Kart. Like, it's just like a big hodgepodge, Undertale, of different stuff. So mm-hmm. yeah, if like The Last of Us, Call of Duty, really like intense,
I'm gonna watch
gaming,
their The Last of Us videos. Yeah. That's amazing.
Oh yeah. So like if that kind of stuff is like a little too much for you, but you want something that's on like that's fun in the background, I would recommend checking them out. And they are pretty good at uploading. I don't know. I don't like have alerts set to my phone. It looks like they upload about once a week. I think that they're on tour right now, so it might be a little slower than normal, but you'll probably find something that you'll like on there because they get pretty creative, so that's kind of fun.
That's really awesome. That's definitely, like, I like, you know, this one just because she's kind of soothing to listen to and I don't really have to pay attention. But Dan and Phil, I don't actually know them, but I do kind of like the idea of sort of just people hanging out and just mm-hmm. like talking. That's why I like podcasts, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sure this will be.
I think that that's why I kind of gravitate to their gaming stuff because it just gets uploaded often. And it's kind of like nice, like strangely therapeutic to listen in on two people. Just like, it's almost like you're cleaning the house and then like two mm-hmm. of your friends are playing video games next door, you know?
Yeah.
So like you can
yeah, exactly.
watch, but if you don't want to sit there watching, you know, two guys play golf with friends for a half hour, you can totally just listen to the banter in the background. And it's really nice to have on I think that they're great. They're super funny too.
Okay, so those were our Howie hypes for this week. Please, if anyone else has watched Ocean's 8, or if anyone else has seen Solo, or if anyone else watches Let's Play videos on YouTube and has some recommendations, please send those in. All three are great. Moving on to the news, Pam has the first story in the doc. Clearly, the top story in the doc, because it's the most important.
What? Like, it's hard? Oh my gosh, you guys. So it's been like over 10 years since Elle Woods walked into our hearts with her fabulous pink wardrobe and just took Harvard Law by storm and Legally Blonde. But exciting news, Reese Witherspoon is officially returning to star as Elle Woods once more in Legally Blonde 3. So this is big news if you were a fan of the first two movies. And there aren't too many details with regards to what the plot's going to entail. Obviously, in the first one, Elle tackled Harvard Law School and became a lawyer. And then in the second one, she was off taking America's capital by storm and fighting against animal testing. But I mean, these are just like such fun movies. And Reese Witherspoon in the past has talked about, you know, how much of an influence Elle has had, and how, you know, kind of like we need more women like Elle with gumption and that don't, you know, put aside their femininity in order to kind of tackle like real jobs like this, like jobs that are hard. So it's just really fun to see that she's down to come back after all these years. And they have a bunch of like the original writers and original producers on board as well. So I feel like the tone of the third one is going to be really true to, you know, the original that everybody kind of loves so much. And it's going to be really fun to see what they do with this. Are you excited for this? Did you like the Legally Blonde movies?
Oh, of course. I'm so excited for this. I made a joke that I wasn't going to watch it unless it was called Legally Blonde. I don't stand by that. That was just, you know, hilarious as always. But no, I love this. I think it is so great. I think that the world needs some Elle Woods right now. I think there are people, you know, we are in the age of nostalgia in general. People seek things they know. But I think just like that Netflix movie where Jennifer Aniston and Tig Notaro are the president and the first lady, like I think we just need women in charge in our media until it becomes normalized enough to actually happen in real life, right? So I think Elle Woods, we need Leslie Knope back.
Yeah.
we need all the women in all the power. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy this is happening, and I hope that she becomes president in this one.
Oh my gosh, how amazing would that be?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that she's like down to, I'm always like such a big fan of actors and actresses that don't fear coming back to roles. Mm-hmm. You know, because so many people could be like, I'm so above that. That was like so early on in my career. But I just love that she's like, yeah, I'll do it because it was fun, you know?
Yeah.
And she really is somebody that clearly understands like the reach that, you know, a character like this has had. Every year when we see students graduating, she always does like the montage on Instagram of people that have quoted Elle Woods on their cap and gowns and stuff like that. It's just like really nice to see that people take that to heart and they use that as inspiration to kind of remind themselves that they can be anything they want. Doesn't matter what you sound like or look like or where you come from. You can do it if you try.
Yeah. Yay. Yay for good things. And on the note of good things and threes, How to Train Your Dragon is also coming back because, you know, we need Elle Woods, we need dragons, we need all the things. It's so funny because I saw this news story, How to Train Your Dragon 3, and I was like, continuing again, just let it go, just always sequels and threequels and whatever. And then I actually saw the trailer and I was like, oh, right. I love this. Like, the more, the better. This one, it's kind of funny because movies are becoming so much more like TV seasons. Like, I was thinking this about Legally Blonde as well. Like, how, of course, there's always room for a third movie, just as when you do a TV show. Like, there's always potential for a new season. you know, following the same people doing different stuff. And it's the same for Legally Blonde. It's the same for How to Train Your Dragon. This time, you know, the characters are a little bit older and they find an island of dragons and they discover Toothless has like another type of his dragon is there, and that dragon is very rare and they're being hunted and they go on this adventure. And it's also beautiful because these movies are not just sweet, they're also incredibly beautiful. The soundtrack, I think it's like Ed Sheeran on the soundtrack, like Castle on the Hill, which is pretty weird, but it works for the trailer.
And that's kind of like perfect.
It's kind of perfect, yeah. And then, but the music in How to Train Your Dragon, just the score, is always so beautiful. So I'm just really excited for all of that. And the art design, like the art books for How to Train Your Dragons, was like some of the only art books I would ever consider buying because it's so stunning. It's really underrated, these movies.
I love the first two How to Train Your Dragon movies, unironically. So much love. I had no idea they were making a third one. Yeah.
I had no idea
they were making one. But because they also have the TV show, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a thing that exists out in the world. So it's kind of fun to know that they've been working on this movie the whole time and we clearly just didn't know. But yeah. I'm excited for this. I don't think that I would have thought we needed one, but I'm here for it.
Exactly. That's exactly how I feel. We have to wait a little bit longer because it doesn't come out until March 2019, but I am officially on board. I'm very excited.
Well, here's something else that I know a lot of people are going to be on board for. We learned earlier this year that Shonda Rhimes is leaving ABC and she's signed an exclusive multi-year deal with Netflix. It was a really big deal when this was announced, but even though her deal with Netflix was announced, we hadn't heard word of what she might be working on with Netflix in terms of like new original content. And now we finally found out what her first project is going to be over at the online streaming platform. So her first show with Netflix is actually going to be based off of a recent New York Magazine article that completely took the internet by storm a few weeks ago. It was trending all over the place. The article centered on a woman named Anna Delvey, whose real name is Anna Sorkin, and she actually gained notoriety for posing as a German heiress in order to talk her way into a life of luxury. She's like one of the biggest con artists in the past few years. She deceived banks, businesses, other friends in the social scene in order to secure money and live out this lavish heiress lifestyle, which included international holidays, stays in expensive hotels, and so much more. The articles, there were two that were kind of published almost consecutively, one over at The Cut and one at Vanity Fair, that was written in first person by a photo editor who actually got conned out of like $65,000 after her run-in with this con artist. And they're like riveting reads. So if you're looking for long form reads and you're interested in finding out more about the subject of Shonda Rhimes' upcoming Netflix show, I would highly recommend checking those out because it's kind of fascinating in a really scary way.
Yeah. Yeah, this is. I can see why this sparked her creative interest, because what a story. That's incredible. Our next story is also sparking some creative interest. It's news on one of the many Game of Thrones prequel series that are currently in the works at HBO. The first one has been ordered to series, which is... Fans of George R. R. Martin will be familiar with the source material. It takes place in the Golden Age of Heroes and follows sort of the world's descent from this glorious time into its darkest hour. This is the period of history in which the Night Kings were first came to power, which is a really scary tale. But the awesome thing about this, other than the fact that it takes place in a really fascinating period of Westerosi history, is that it actually has a female showrunner. It is Jane Goldman, who has written X-Men First Class is serving a showrunner this, and she co-wrote the pilot with George R. R. Martin, who obviously penned, I don't remember what the anthology book was called where George R. R. Martin first laid this out, but he'll be working on this series as well. So it'll be true to the source material, or at least, you know, inspired and adapted closely from it. And just a little bit more information about this, the Age of Heroes followed, you know, the end of the conflict between the Children of the Forest and the First Men. So this was when they worked together. Bran the Builder was alive during this time, Simeon Star Eyes, and Lan the Clever. And it ended with the Long Night, which is the last time that what they fear in present-day Game of Thrones happened. So it's really exciting. It's basically like the same threat that has sort of colored Game of Thrones since the beginning, but with different characters. So I don't know if it's going to end up being too similar, but I really sort of like the idea of this. So I'm like, and the female showrunner part, so I'm like willing to give it a chance. What do you think?
Yeah, I really like this as well. I think that, like, we always kind of knew that there were a few different avenues that they might take when it came to, you know, the next installment of Game of Thrones over on HBO. And I think that this is really, really smart, because this is obviously like a subject that intrigues not only, you know, maybe fans of the books that then became fans of the show, but also just casual watchers of the show, you know? So yeah. I think that this is a really smart move. And I think it's even more exciting that they're going to get some fresh new blood in there to helm the show, because don't want to get too stale with this stuff.
So yeah, exactly.
That's especially exciting.
It is.
Well, here's something that I'm on the fence about a little bit, but we're getting it no matter what, so maybe I shouldn't complain. Netflix has officially ordered season 3 of 13 Reasons Why. This is coming hot off the heels of the release of season 2, and maybe I'll talk a little bit about this in my TV show of the week, because I haven't had a chance to talk about it since. This is probably not going to surprise anyone, regardless of the controversy surrounding the series. This is one of the most popular shows that Netflix has, you know, released to date. So there's no details about, you know, what the plot might entail, but if you've finished off season 2 of the show, you probably have a good idea as to what maybe we might be in store for. And there's also no word yet on when we can expect to see it hit the internet, but it is set to be released sometime next year. So I'm assuming we'll get it sometime around maybe like a year from now, which seems to be the trend for Netflix. And then as a little sidebar to this, Netflix also unveiled the official release date for Orange is the New Black Season 6. So if you're keeping up with that, the new series will premiere officially via Netflix on July 27th.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I would love to hear more of your thoughts on this. I guess it makes sense to save it for TV show of the week. We do also have an email from Laura about 13 Reasons Why season 2. I've got to be honest, I didn't watch season 2. I did really like season 1, but I sort of, when season 2 grew closer and I watched a few of the promos, I just began to feel like, okay, well, I saw what I wanted to see. You know, like I just realized that I wasn't invested in these characters enough to devote time to it. Like I just sort of felt like I just wasn't interested. It was really weird. Like I felt satisfied with season 1, and I know that just because something doesn't have to go on doesn't mean it can't. We were just talking about How to Train Your Dragon and Legally Blonde, but in the case of 13 Reasons Why, I was like, well, I know the 13 reasons. I'm good. I got it. And so sort of hearing some of the feedback for season 2, I guess I feel like validated in my choice, and I'm just so confused why there is a season 3.
It's kind of like, I don't think that I'm confused, but I also just, I don't know how to explain this without like actually spoiling. Maybe we can save my comments to the end, and if you're not going to watch, I can just like air out my grievances.
Yeah, good idea.
Does
yeah.
that sound good?
It does. I like
okay,
it.
Okay, cool. We'll do cool. that. And then that way, if you haven't watched yet or you're taking your time with it, which is understandable, you don't have to worry about being spoiled.
Totally. All right. So we're going to wrap up the news now with an amazing story that I cannot possibly imagine anyone's going to be mad about. There's news about BBC's adaptation of His Dark Materials, which just, however you frame it, I think it is just going to be fantastic. And I'm beginning to think it's going to be like, if this does well, Harry Potter is a few years away. But anyway, that's another discussion. They've cast another couple of great actors. Clark Peters, who I just looked him up. I haven't seen him in anything, but he looks like a great actor, you know, based on Google, will be playing Lyra's mentor-ish person at Oxford College, the man who kind of raised Lyra. And James McAvoy will be playing Lord Asriel, a.k.a. Lyra's father. Oh my God, James McAvoy. Like, this is, it's so funny because this is so much like casting Jude Law as Dumbledore. And it made me realize that I never really fully considered James McAvoy and Jude Law to be separate people. Like, I always kind of merged them in my head because I was like, oh, they got the same person as Dumbledore. Oh, wait, no, that's a different guy that kind of looks like that. So that was a weird discovery. But other than that, I'm just really excited for James McAvoy to be playing Lord Asriel, who is one of His Dark Materials' most complex characters, to say the least. Lyra is being played by Daphne Keane from Logan, another inspired choice. And funnily enough, the two have acted together before, or have they? No, wait, he wasn't in Logan. Why am I so confused with these actors? The X-Men is a confusing franchise, but in like kind of, because she did act with Professor X, but I guess it was a different Professor X, so never mind. My point is invalid. This is still very exciting, and the X-Men is somehow the general theme of this point. So yay. And Lin-Manuel Miranda is still attached as Lee Scoresby. So it just continues to get better and better.
Yeah, this cast is so cool.
So good.
So excited. And yeah. James McAvoy is great and so multifaceted as an actor. And yeah, he's going to be great. Everything about this is like making me really happy. I love that it's a mini series that they're actually going to be able to like really dive deep into the books because there's so much going on. And yeah, the cast just looks so good.
It does. Like, literally, I'm so excited. The only thing that could potentially bring it down is that it's written by Jack Thorne of the Cursed Child fame. But I mean, the Cursed Child is good. It's just the twists that are stupid. So I'm still excited.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. The thing that everybody says is that it's great when it comes to life on stage. So now he can make this come to life on screen and hopefully it'll be enchanting.
Yeah, I think so. This is so great. This is definitely like one of my like top five things that I'm excited about. And How to Train Your Dragon is like sneaking up on my list. But anyway, this is great. All right, so that brings us to the end of the news. We picked out some exciting and or confusing stories for you guys. There's a bunch of other stuff over in Hypeable that you guys can check out if you're interested. Dan Radcliffe is heading back to Broadway. Jared Leto is doing a Joker film. Jason Momoa has exited the Crow remake, which is still continues to be cursed. The Heathers reboot has been canceled. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on that you can check out over on Hypeable.com. Now we're going to move into TV Show of the Week, where we talk about what TV shows we've been watching. And I guess because we're saving 13 Reasons Why, I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit about The 100. And Pam is, of course, welcome to also talk about The 100. Are you all caught up?
I'm not caught up on The 100.
Oh, my God. So I guess I'm not going to talk about all of The 100. How far are you?
Have you watched? I'm one episode behind.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's actually pretty okay because I feel like Exit Wounds was the last episode that aired last week. There's no new episode this week. There's a new one yet next week. And that was, it was good.
Didn't they also take another break too? Like,
yes.
Yeah. See, this is what happens. I'm really bad when shows like go like 1 week, yes, 1 week, no. And then I'm like, wait, what's happening? You know?
I know. If only there was someone you could ask who would for sure know. No, I'm kidding.
Me just tweeting at Selena. Hey, Selena, is there an episode of The 100 today?
I would answer. Anyway, Exit Wounds was good, but it was probably my least favorite of the season. I feel like the first five have been at such a sky-high standard. Like, these first five episodes are the best, like, five consecutive episodes of any season of The 100, like any season of television almost. Like, they're just all of them so freaking good. And in Shifting Sands, which was the one where they were all going through the desert, I love seeing Clark and Bellamy and Octavia back together and trying to figure out, like, who they are to each other and what they can be, and just seeing Clark and Bellamy just confronted with the madness of one crew, you know, even as they have to consider the threat of Dioza and Eligius, is just, it's so wild, but it's so interesting.
Yes, I think that, you know, we've talked a lot before about how one of the things that makes The 100 the most special is, like, not necessarily just the character study of people being put into extreme situations, but also the way in which they relate to each other and interact with each other. And more so now, because, you know, like, while all of these characters are still the same people, they're, like, completely different than when we last left them. It's been even more exciting to see kind of, you know, some of these pairings that have been split up for so long now come back together and try and, you know, pick up the fragments of their relationships and just be in new relationships with each other despite everything that has changed and everything that's happening around them.
Yeah, for sure. Which characters are you, like, most excited for, like, post time jump?
I'm still, like, you know, like you, the Bellamy and Octavia, always, like, they're so interesting to watch, always, because they can never really quite get there, because something always happens that kind of, you know, pulls them apart a little bit, and there's so much pent up emotion and yet, like, they will always love each other in some way because you know, they're brother and sister. But I think that specifically because of what Octavia has had to go through down in the bunker, and then everything that they're dealing with now, I think that I'm watching them as a pair the most because I'm just, you know, and I'm also genuinely invested in hoping that in whatever way this show ends up wrapping up at some point, that they get a nice fitting ending for their story arc, you know?
Yeah. Do you think that Octavia is going to survive the season? Because I've seen some people who believe she won't and some people who are sure that she will. So I don't know.
She's like a cat with nine lives. Like, the number of times she probably should have died because of her reckless behavior is, like, there's too many to count, you know?
Yeah.
That's hard. I want to say that she will, because at the end of the day, like Clark, she is very much a survivor. But she's also so reckless. So it's so hard to gamble on her fate, honestly. I would be shocked if they killed her off, though.
Yeah, see, it's the thing that's sort of one of the things that's occupying my mind right now the most, because I think it's so hard to imagine The 100 without Octavia. Not just for Bellamy, but just for the story in general. I think what I love about her is that she's such a wild card. Like, no matter where her story goes, you can never predict where her story is going to go. And you can never predict if she's going to be, like, a friend or a foe to the other characters. And her mental state, she's so messed up, but she's so complex that so many different parts of her, you never know which one's going to win. So it's like, just for her story's sake, I'm like, well, would The 100 not be, like, 30% less interesting without Octavia? Like, I think it will. But then on the other hand, now that they've taken her to this extreme, this Blood Reyna extreme, I'm not sure I see how they could bring her back from that. Like, I think whether she reaches a point when she like just goes full Blood Rain and does something awful, or she breaks and she's like, all right, well, I can't do this, so I guess I will have to quit my job as Blood Rainer, because this thing is maybe like having to kill Maddie or something. She's like, I can't do it. But then what happens after that? How do they rehabilitate her? And if the show really is moving in like a completely different direction at the end of the season again, which everyone's kind of speculating that it is, how is she going to fit into that? How is she ever going to be like follow someone else's rules again, you know?
I don't think as a character she can. It's like caging a bird, you know? I guess you could argue that she's been caged this whole time down in the bunker, but she hasn't really, because she's, you know, she figured out how to rise to the top of the food chain, so she's calling the shots.
Mm-hmm.
I think that as a character, she's really good at compartmentalizing, and I think that that is what's helped her become the survivor that she is. But you're right, there's going to be a tipping point where she won't be able to come back.
Yeah.
And it's kind of more of a, not a matter of if, but more of a matter of when.
Mm-hmm.
And it does kind of feel like she's close.
Yeah. And so I just don't know. Like, a part of me is like, Octavia is one of the pillars of the show. I don't think they can lose her. And the other part of me is like, yeah, but where do they go with her after this? I don't know. It's kind of like when Finn, not to compare Octavia and Finn, but when he killed those people, it was like, all right, well, there's no going back from that. Like, there's that's too far. Like, he crossed the line, right? So that's one of the things that I'm thinking about with The 100 right now. And aside from that, I'm just enjoying the ride. Like, I think this show, this season is just so good. If you're not watching The 100, like, do it. You're missing out. Everything, this time jump just allowed them to refigure everything and sharpen everything we loved about it and lose some of the things we didn't. So, big fan. A+, 10 out of 10, 100 out of 100.
How fitting.
Yes. Do you want to talk about 13 Reasons Why now or save it for after listener feedback?
Up to you. What's going to be easier as far as like putting in a spoiler warning?
Okay, well, actually, this is really easy because we have like 3 tweets and then we have an email from Laura about 13
okay,
Reasons Why. So let's just do
three tweets.
One of them is from Laura.
Okay. All right.
So, if you want to get that one.
Yes. Laura tweeted at us and said, the TV gods hate me this year. They have canceled Life Sentence, Scorpion on CBS, Shadowhunters, The Fosters, Young and Hungry, Baby Daddy, Pretty Little Liars. The only highlight is 13 Reasons Why Season 3. I need some new shows to look forward to. Go. Thanks. And then she also tweeted at us again and said, okay, after 13 Reasons Why Season 2 and The 100 Season 5, I need lighter TVs to watch. I'm going to begin Brooklyn Nine-Nine on your rec. That's exciting.
Yeah, Brooklyn Nine-Nine for sure is lighter TV that you will like. Superstore, I know I just talked about Superstore last week, but I just want to reiterate, this is lighter TV that you will love, especially if you like Brooklyn Nine-Nine. If you haven't yet seen The Good Place, obviously, I think you have, but just in case you haven't, and One Day at a Time on Netflix. Those are like my go-to feel-good TV series right now.
Yes, those are all great. I also, over on Netflix, really, really love Queer Eye. I know it's like reality television, but it's going to make you feel so good. If you haven't checked that out yet, please check it out. And new episodes are going live at the end of this week. So that's pretty exciting, too, if you've already powered through season one.
Yeah.
8 new episodes, and they're all so good. I'm so excited for everybody to check them out. And also, like, I kind of fell off the bandwagon, but, like, if you're looking just for lighter television, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is also really great. The first 2 seasons I can vouch for anyway. And Jane the Virgin is awesome, too, if you haven't seen that
yet. My mother started watching that. She's really into it.
Oh, really? She likes
it? Yeah. It's like, it's a good mom show, I think.
That's cool. You know what's so funny is like, so many people were like late to the bandwagon that I follow on Twitter, you know, maybe not super in tune with pop culture. Like, what, Jane the Virgin's ending? Like, this is like the only show that shows a Latin family, like just doing Latin family things. And I'm like, have you heard about One Day at a Time? That's like half my job now is tweeting at people that are sad about losing their Latino family from Jane the Virgin. And me being like, have you heard about One Day at a Time? It's really good.
Oh, speaking of actually, sorry, The Bold Type. It's coming back today we're recording this. So for sure, The Bold Type season 2 is starting this week, Laura. So make sure you watch that. It's like ultimate feel-good TV.
Yes. I think we have like a good little list going for her.
I agree. the next tweet is from Shelley, who it's for me. She says, I'm so with you on Throne of Glass. I also can't quit it, but it's getting so terrible. I know. It's so weird. I just bought Tower of Storms or whatever it's called, though. So I don't think it's terrible. Like, I wouldn't read it if I thought it was terrible. It's just not remarkable. That's what's so weird about it. It's like watching Let's Play videos on YouTube in the background, but reading. It's weird. But anyway, I'm going to keep going and keep reporting back.
And then we have one more tweet here from Stephanie Merrill, who says, catching up on hype and Selena, if you can't make it to season 3 of The Magicians, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. Quentin gets much better and the format becomes more ensemble.
That's good. It's good that you mentioned that. I finished season 2. Which everyone said that season 2 is so good, and I didn't find it particularly good. So I was like, yeah, whatever. But I did actually hear other people say as well that season 3 is the best one. So I guess I will check it out. And everyone's coming in defense of Quentin, which is hard to imagine. But I suppose that I will believe you. Alice has topped him as being the more annoying for me right now. I'm so like annoyed with most of them at this point. And I did not think the Les Miserables thing was that good. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to end up thinking. But thank you so much. I will try. All right, so that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for your feedback. Well, the end if you don't want to be spoiled on 13 Reasons Why. If you do want to be spoiled on 13 Reasons Why, then just keep listening for a bit. But otherwise, goodbye. See you next week. All right, so 13 okay. Reasons Why. We're going to kick off with an email by Laura Morrow if you want to get that one. Is that? Oh, yes. Should I get it since you're going to be talking after?
Yeah, I guess you get it because I'll be talking and then we can talk about it together, I guess.
Yes, take some water and I'll get this one from Laura.
All right, got to get ready.
Yes. She says, I'm so behind on episodes because I feel super behind on the 100 and I like to watch episodes and then listen to your podcast. I just wanted to share some thoughts on 13 Reasons Why Season 2. Last year, I really loved 13 Reasons Why, and I think it was probably my favorite TV show of the year. I was super excited for season 2. I really loved Clay and Hannah and wanted to see more of their story. But something unexpected happened after I watched season 2. I grew to enjoy and understand all the characters I disliked in season 1, like Ryan, Justin, and Zach, and even Alex. I still think Clay's arc is one of my favorites, but now I'm equally invested in all the characters and not just Clay. I know the show gets so much hate, at least on my timeline, but I highly recommend it after you watch the show to watch the documentary behind the reasons that explains their choices with doctors. It made me understand their choices even more. I really enjoyed the show because it really made these characters from season 1 so much more complex, and I'm now even more invested in them. So I was thrilled to see they got a third season pickup because now I just need to see what happens to these cast of characters and not just Clay. That was a unique development. I definitely need to rewatch now that I got back from my bookish themed conventions, but I wanted to share my positive thoughts about the show. There you go. That's Laura's positive opinion. I love positive opinions.
I'm really happy that you're happy, Laura. I really am. I also watched Behind the Reasons because I felt like it was important to do that. And while I understand why they made the choices that they made, I'm still a little unsettled by this season. And I feel a little hypocritical saying that because a lot of what made me uncomfortable, I think, was similar to why people were uncomfortable with the first season, which is that they didn't feel, they felt like it was harmful in terms of the way that they depicted suicide and depression and stuff. I don't personally agree with that. Selena and I have talked before about how we both felt as though the first season was really compelling and not glorifying at all. But if you feel that way, that's totally okay. Like, that's your opinion and you're entitled to that. For season two specifically, I had a lot. Have you read like the full synopsis?
No, you can spoil me. It's fine.
Okay. So it all kind of, most of it takes place like in the context of the court case against the school and also Mrs. Baker, who's played by Kate Walsh. And, you know, she's suing the school for what happened to, like, basically, like, negligence and not realizing that there was, like, a huge problem and a huge bullying problem. But there's, like, so much going on this season because on top of that, there's, like, you know, the whole, like, rape situation. And they have this entire, like, basically, like, you think that the story is about Hannah and it is, but then it turns into, like, a much larger story about kind of, like, the Me Too movement and how jocks are treating women at this school, which is, you know, something that's like a very real life issue. So I didn't have a problem with that. What I do have a problem with is how the series ended. So if you have seen the show, you will know that one of the characters that is like a kind of a little bit irredeemable is that of Tyler. He's like the creepy photographer guy that kind of is like the one that invades Hannah's privacy in the first season. And then Clay kind of gets back at him and sends a picture around of him. And he's already been bullied. So he like gets bullied even more. Do you remember that? So in season two, he's still kind of like this social pariah. And things kind of come to a head with him at the end. And there's this awful, gruesome, totally, like, unwatchable for me scene involving him getting sodomized with a broom handle. And it was just, like, first of all, way too much for me to watch. And this all happens, like, when he comes back from, like, a major, like, bout of therapy and, like, kind of, like, correctional therapy in order to, like, be more okay with his mental state. And he's trying to, like, you know, turn over a new leaf and the some of the kids at the school just, like, won't let him do that. And that's kind of when this gruesome event happens. And then everything kind of starts falling into place because the last scene we saw of Tyler in season one, he was like showing off his gun collection and the idea of guns is something that like is recurring in season two. And when they're all at the dance, he like shows up with a gun, an AR-15, which is one of the automatic rifles that has been used in many of the shootings that have taken place in the United States. And it's a result of, you know, what happened to him in the bathroom. And I don't condone that behavior, but I also kind of feel like the idea that his character is redeemable because Clay's able to talk him down and convince him not to shoot up the school, I kind of feel like that's a little toxic in terms of the environment that we're living in right now. And I also kind of don't really agree with the idea that, like, when I was watching the Behind the Reasons, the showrunner said that they knew that he was never going to go through with the school shooting and that they knew that that was the arc that his character was going to take, but they felt like they needed to shock the audience into sympathizing with him, even though he's been like an outsider this whole time. And that's why they decided on that horrific scene in the bathroom. And I just, that really didn't sit well with me because I think that like, one of the biggest problems that we always talk about, like when it comes to shootings of any kind in America, specifically school shootings, is the idea of mental health and how that plays into somebody's decision to commit such a heinous crime. And while I agree that mental health needs to be something that's addressed in this country, I also feel like it's a little bit toxic to have sympathy for somebody that could have potentially done something that other people have actually done. You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Especially when you take into account that he is, I hate to bring race into it, but he's like a white male, you know?
Yeah.
And we saw that most recently with the shooting in Texas where, you know, even the president of the United States said that he was a wacko. But if he had been brown, he would have been a terrorist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It just, I don't know. I had like a lot of problems with it. And I appreciate that they had the deep dive into the season and they talk, you know, they did say like, we don't suggest like if this is ever happening in your school that you take a stand like Clay did and go out there and like confront the shooter. But like, we felt like it was important to the plot. I don't know. It just didn't, it's still not sitting well with me. And it does open up a lot of room for future storytelling in season three, because the last scene that we get is one of Clay pushing Tyler into the car with Tony. And then Tony is like rushing off with Tyler so that he doesn't get caught by the police. And Clay's the one standing there holding the gun in front of the school.
Hmm.
So there's a lot that they could go into after that. But at the same time, it's just like the, I don't know. It's hard. Do you see what I mean? Like it's, I'm so torn over this. It's just like, there's a lot that I'm not sure if I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to raise awareness. I just don't really feel like it landed fully with me.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I think it's interesting because, you know, you think of other shows that have done similar storylines. Like there was one on Buffy. Obviously, it turned out that that was a misdirect, but that was in like 1998. And then there was one on One Tree Hill, which was in like 2003 or something like that, you know? And I feel like the environment between then and now, like kind of, you know, read the room. You know what I mean? Like, I think that entertainment media has a unique capacity to make you feel empathy or sympathy for people. You know, that's kind of one of the things that 13 Reasons Why, you know, that even Laura pointed out, is one of it's the strengths of that narrative, is that it can portray people that you might see as bad, and then it can turn it around and go, well, you know, nobody is just one thing. Like, it's easy for us to view people as unequivocally good or unequivocally bad, but that's not the reality of the world. But that said, that's not the, there's a time and a place to have this conversation, and it sounds like, you know, not only did 13 Reasons Why hit an extremely bad time to tackle this discourse, but at the moment, you don't want to portray people that have the capacity of doing something like this in this kind of sympathetic light, especially because, you know, Tyler, like, it sounds to me like they wanted to give him a trauma so extreme that it would quote unquote justify his actions or make them understandable. And I think the point is that you don't, like, first of all, his actions are not understandable. And second, you don't want to try to manipulate your audience into thinking that they could be in any way understandable.
Right.
So it's not like you can't do a storyline like this, even though I would personally say that this is not a good time to do a storyline like this. But you certainly don't want to make your point of that story to be like, oh, you know, school shooters, they're people too. Like, that's not...
Right.
That's a misguided message, I think.
Yeah, and I think that that's like, I don't know, in a time where, like, any time, and it's happening more frequently in America, anytime there is a shooting, you know, incident, we talk mm-hmm. about, like, we have the same conversation. It's like, don't glorify the shooter. Don't mm-hmm. sympathize with the shooter. I guess you could argue that Tyler isn't really the shooter because he opts to listen to Clay. But at the end of the day, he still went with the intent of doing something terrible. And I've seen a lot of arguments online saying like, but he didn't really want to go through with it because there's like also a side storyline with him where he makes friends with this like kid that's kind of very punky and like look, and he has like a sister, and they kind of have like this little like romantic inkling. And then he comes back from his time away, and she's got a boyfriend. So like, he was like hoping to like make it work, and now he can't because she's like tied up. And the only reason that Clay and like their group finds out is because he texts her and tells her to like get out.
Oh, wow.
But like, I don't know. It's just like, I think that it's that's also like super unrealistic, because how many times have we heard of like murder suicides where the person decides to like shoot a place up because they got rejected, which is awful. Or like, let's not even forget that Clay is also equally responsible for part of his misery because he texted out the photo of him in season one. So to then have Clay out there, you know, talking him down, it's just like, he would have been the first person to get shot in real life. Because people that are already committed to doing this, like, they don't forget that. They're just blinded with hate and rage.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just like, I'm so conflicted, and I get what they're trying to do. They're trying to raise awareness, but sometimes even things with the best intentions don't quite land. And I just feel like this did not quite land with me.
Yeah. I can see that. I think that's fair. It's a really interesting discussion to have, though. And like, I think, unfortunately, I think that they wanted people to have a discussion, but based on the feedback I've seen, it doesn't seem like they're quite hitting the right discussion. People are not asking, like, talking about the storyline. They're talking about how they handled the storyline.
Right. I will say that the stuff about the trial and the abuse, like the sexual abuse and harassment of jocks, like with other women at the school or girls at the school, like, I think that was handled pretty true to real life. They kind of took a page out. Do you remember that terrible jerk, Brock Turner, that only got like 6 months after he raped a girl at Stanford? I don't know if you keep up with news and stuff. Well, yeah. So like, they kind of like, I hate to say paid homage to that, but they were very realistic with like the trial, and, you know, made sure that, I keep forgetting that guy's name, but like the main, like really like douchey jock guy, that's like a total asshole. Like, he only gets like probation and doesn't like actually go to jail and stuff. I feel like there's a time and a place to be like realistic. So I get that. But then there's stuff like this, like other shooting subplot that I was like, this is just not, first of all, unrealistic, but also like potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
And again, like, that's why I feel like super hypocritical I just feel super hypocritical about it now, because like, you know, that's kind of like a similar argument that people had that didn't like season one. They're like, this is dangerous to, you know, mental health. And I kind of felt like it was like, no, I don't feel like it's dangerous. Like, you shouldn't watch it if you're triggered. But like, I think it's really important to have conversations like this. And I don't know. It's like the same argument that naysayers are giving for season one is basically what I'm giving for season two. So I don't know.
It's interesting. All is relative. You know, I do think that's interesting. We can't apply the same, like, first of all, everyone's going to have like a different opinion, but we also can't just apply things like one-to-one. You know, so many factors play into why you might feel differently about this one than the other one. So I don't know. I have no answers or explanations, but I do think it's an interesting take. I'm glad that I didn't watch season two, but I'm really appreciating sort of getting the insight into all of this, because my God, this series.
I know. Well, anyway, that's where I'm at. Yeah, weeks no, later, and I still don't know how I feel. Like I've been trying so hard to see it from the other side, and I just can't get over it. I think I've made my mind up. I'm uncomfortable.
Which is fair. Yeah, it's totally fair. And if anyone wants to chime in, feel free, Laura or anyone else who's watched it. I would love to hear more about how everyone's feeling about this.
Yeah, send me good hot takes too. I will accept those. Like if you guys read some really good like features, deep dives into specifically like the ending of season two that you really liked, like send them my way on Twitter because I'm open to reading them.
For sure. Yes, 100%. All right, so that brings us to the end of Hype 190, and we appreciate all your feedback and that you listen to us. And if you have any thoughts on this week's episode or anything we talked about, anything you would like us to talk about, you can send that in via Twitter at HypeableHype and via email, which is hype@hypeable.com. I don't know why my via and via differs from platform to platform, but there you go. That's just how it works for me. And of course, as we said at the top of the show, we also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, where if you subscribe with $2 a month, you get a bonus segment every week. This week's extended discussion is going to be about Kelly Marie Tran leaving Instagram and the sort of messy situation in the Star Wars fandom right now. Until next week, have a wonderful week, everybody. Thank you for listening. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.